Some rules for Monday, April 23rd. Good morning to all. Chair Rosenbaum is testifying on behalf of one of her bills in another committee, and she left a gavel to me. I'm really disappointed Representative Escobar isn't here to see it because I think it's a put the fear of God into him.
He might get hit with it.
We're going to move the agenda around slightly, members. We're going to take House Bill 3534 first, and Dr. Stembridge, Representative Escobar, you just missed my introduction to you. Dr. Stembridge, if you'd be so kind as to review the bill for us.
Yes, Chair Buckley, Vice Chair Buckley, House Bill 3534 directs the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission to name the Fall Creek Research Center the Lindsey Ball Research Hatchery.
Thank you, Doctor.
I'm concerned.
And we have Representative Morgan is here, and Representative Krieger is on his way, but we'll start with Representative Morgan's testimony on it. Good morning, Representative, and welcome to Elections, Ethics, and Rules.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and thank you for allowing me to testify. For the record, my name is Susan Morgan. I'm a House side representative from House District 2, and I'm here today to testify in favor of House Bill 3534. I think it is a great idea to recognize Director Ball's career and his dedication to the state of Oregon by naming the research hatchery after him. The research hatchery, in fact, wouldn't exist without Director Ball's dedication to that. I first got to know the director when I came to the legislature in the 99 session, and at that point he was the head of the Fish and Game Division of the Oregon State Police, and I was working at that time primarily in natural resource issues, and met him through the funding of the Fish and Game Division, which takes place in the natural resource arena. He then moved on to become the director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. He stepped into a very, very hot spot there, where there were a number of issues around the way that agency was being managed, and there wasn't a lot of trust in the legislature or in the governor's office with the management of the agency at that time. The only person that we could agree on that we agreed had the integrity and the skills to step into that job was Lindsey Ball, and he agreed to step in as the interim director of ODFW, and then the commission named him as the permanent director, and he served in that position for a number of years. And during the time that he was the director of Fish and Wildlife, he was, along with the rest of us in the private sector and in the legislature, embroiled around a lot of issues that had to do with wild fish and hatchery fish and endangered species listings and all those kinds of things that we're still dealing with today. And one of the things that we were continually frustrated by during that time was a lack of quantitative evidence about what was a wild fish, what was a hatchery fish, what indeed were the differences between those two, and was it possible to be able to use the state hatchery system to mitigate for the loss of species of fish where we didn't have enough runs in the wild to be able to hopefully restore them. And so out of that, the concept of a research hatchery was born, and there was a lot of work done by the department under the direction of Lindsey Ball to find out and talk about the experts in the world in this area and come up with a design and a research plan for a hatchery that would help us understand some of those issues that I outlined. We were able to identify a funding source, a little pocket of money from the Measure 66 funds that was dedicated to research. And so then there was a program put in place to rebuild the hatchery. That was a mothballed ODF&W hatchery that had a terrific water source. And that hatchery is there today. It's a joint effort between Oregon State University and ODFW. And it's in the process of doing some very breaking edge research under one of the world's leading fish biologists. So this is a world-class institution that Oregon should be very, very proud of. And I think putting Lindsay's name on the building is a fitting tribute to his service, his integrity, and it would be a wonderful thing for the state of Oregon to do this. And with that, I will turn it over to Representative Krieger, if it is the chair's wish.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome, Representative Krieger.
Thank you very much. For the record, I'm Wayne Krieger, State Rep of District 1. I think every week on the floor of the House, we have some recognition of a joint memorial or something for someone that's done great things for their community and for Oregon. And most instances, seldom do I know that person or ever seen them. And we all vote no. I mean, yes, how could we vote any other way? You know, we'd be criticized, you know, even if you didn't know the person or didn't think they did anything so great. And I always ask myself, why do we wait till they're dead? You know, I haven't figured that out. I think it would be better in my mind if we acknowledged their contributions to Oregon and while they were here with us. I'd prefer to shake their hand and give them a hug and thank them, you know, for what they've done personally. Just a couple things about Mr. Ball. I know that Susan, Representative Morgan, has covered, I imagine, the hatchery aspect of it, and I won't go into that too much. But, you know, he spent 20-some plus years with the state police before he came here, and he was an old game man just like I was, and did a good job meeting with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. But some of you might know that he was actually assaulted on Swalby Island back in 82 by four individuals with a tire iron, had his head bashed in, was left for dead. They shot at him with his own revolver and missed, but they thought they'd hit him because there was so much blood coming out of the back of his head. A lot of people don't know that. He almost gave that ultimate sacrifice. When I saw the pictures, they showed them some of the other officers, you know, at training. It was pretty dramatic what had happened to that guy. And you know what he did when he came on the Department of Fish and Wildlife as director and how he turned that agency around and brought accountability back to it and respect, moved the agency here, and caused a, in my mind, a mind shift from the top down through that agency that no one would have envisioned could have happened in 2 years, and it did. And everybody began to, the constituent base of the agency came back, the commercial fish, the sportsmen, all just to really support the agency, realizing they weren't perfect, but there had been great strides made in the way they represented the constituent base, you know, the hunters, the fishermen, the landowners, and in the environmental community to some degree. And specifically, you know, just a little bit about the hatchery. We as Oregonians have struggled, I know Representative Roldan has seen it, about the issue between wild fish and hatchery fish, which is better, what isn't, does one cause a problem with the other, and a lot of unanswered questions. And I really feel that Mr. Ball, when he was envisioning this hatchery, part of that conflict, we really thought, And the environmental questions of it could be really answered by a research hatchery that could actually, on the ground, do experiments to find the real science. So it wasn't I said, he said, in this constant battle within the sports community and even the environmental community. Let's find out what the science really tells us and manage our hatcheries in the very best way that science tells we should do it, not because it's our particular agenda of each of us. I'm just going to close in saying that when I had this idea a little bit, I talked to Representative Morgan, Senator Meserly, Senator Johnson, but it wouldn't do any good if the governor wasn't going to be on board. So I did contact Chip Trahoon, ask the governor what he thought, said, hey, great idea, get it done. So that's what we're here for. I hope that you will pass 35-30 to the floor and honor Mr. Ball by naming the hatchery after him. It wouldn't be there without his efforts and his vision. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions? Comments? Vice Chair Berger.
Thank you.
My own experience with Mr. Ball was equally positive. I've never met the man, but I had a constituent issue and got such incredible responsiveness last session when I called his office. And so I'm very glad you're doing this, but I have to make one sort of intended to be humorous remark, and I've made this to Representative Krieger before. The reason that we wait till you're dead is Mr. Ball is still in state government. He may make us mad. and that's the danger. Once they're gone, they can't make us mad again.
Mr. Chair, my wife was relating to me that he came into the office when he found out about the bill and sat down. He always kind of looks down and kind of looks up at you and says, "What's this?" He was embarrassed. You know, he's somewhat embarrassed about it. But I think in some ways he's thankful. And he recognizes a lot of people took part in it. But it would not have happened if he hadn't had that thought and that vision. But he's a humble man.
Thank you, Kristen. Any other comments? Kristen Roblin.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you haven't been to the hatchery, I think people need to go there and see what's happening. And it looks like a simple thing, and it only looks simple because it is so complex underneath the ground and what they can do. And we had a presentation to our coastal caucus the other day about what they're doing there. And it is truly remarkable what's happening. And this session, I was trying to work with a bill with the coastal caucus just about getting a research, one group that would be in charge of getting research. And I will tell you, there are a lot of different people who want to do that on their own, and they aren't necessarily willing to work all together to get it to happen. And so it has been an exceptionally frustrating experience. We're still working. Maybe it'll come up next session. We'll get some stuff done over the interim. As I got some good learning from the representative sitting in front of us in how we can put groups together to get to an answer. These kinds of things, like this particular thing, cannot happen if there isn't somebody who takes charge. I will tell you, it doesn't happen because there's too many other outside influences that want to do it the way they want to do it. And so it takes that person who's willing to stand there and say, this is where we're going, now let's figure out how to get there and keep pushing it. And so from that perspective, and knowing what we have now, there is nothing like this anywhere in the world, from my understanding and having looked around. And that the part that is so remarkable about it is that they can take out all the variables. You can actually study a particular thing. And we heard last week about how there's this big discussion that hatchery fish don't do as well when they breed out in nature. If they get away, they don't seem to be successful. So what's the cause of that? So there's 100 different reasons that it could be the cause. Well, they've been doing this research where they just put hatchery fish in one channel of this little cream they have, and they have wild fish in the other, and they're separating it all down to the one deal to find out, is it their aggressiveness, is it this, X, Y, Z, to find out if there really is a difference, or if it was just anecdotally we don't think that that's happening. So a true research facility like this one is, in my opinion, going to be the real decision point with respect to how we get back to where we need to be with coastal salmon. So I think it's a great bill and appreciate the opportunity that you brought it together.
Thank you.
Just a comment.
Thank you, Representative. Representative, thank you so much for bringing the bill forward and for your time today. Senator Messerly, would you like to come add some words?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Ken Messerly, retired senator. Before that, I was a representative. When I started in the process in 1997, I was appointed chairman of the Water Policy Committee, which started the salmon program and the Oregon Salmon Plan. That's when I met Director Ball, who was captain of the state police, as it has been stated. Worked very closely with him all the way through. My last session here was in 2005, and I chaired the Ways and Means Natural Resource Committee. And I can really substantiate what the representatives have told you already, that it was Director Ball's vision. He put the people together, coordinated with the university to get the management and the research people in line, and probably most of all, figured out how to fund the thing. And the funding did come from more than one source. It was just tremendous vision and leadership that Director Ball brought forward, and we saw the value of it because of what has been stated before, that there is a lot of questions. What is the difference between hatchery fish and wild fish? And my background is a rancher and feeding cattle in feedlots, and I knew instinctively that you can manage with nutrition and habits and how you feed and all those kind of things to get animals, livestock, to perform and grow. And I feel very strongly that we should be able to do the same thing with hatchery program. We just simply don't know how to do it. So it's a great honor for Director Ball, but I think it's an inspiration for others who have vision and have leadership to move forward and get some good things done too. Urge you to support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. Any questions? Thank you very much for your time. Dennis Ritchie and Fred Vanetta.
Vice Chair Buckley, committee members, my name is Dennis Ritchie. I'm Executive Director of Oregon Anglers. That's a political action committee, but also Executive Director of Oregon Anglers Research Society, a relatively new charitable corporation that was founded to help get research money for various research projects, fisheries research throughout the state. I've been very active in ODFW and a number of working committees. Presently, I'm on the Ocean Sports Policy Advisory Committee. I'm the sports fishing representative for the Upper Willamette Recovery Plan. I was the sports fishing representative on the Coastal Coho Recovery Team. But most importantly to me is that I am the newly elected chair of the Oregon Hatchery Research Center Advisory Committee. And at the dedication of this research facility, I was standing next to Representative Krieger while the governor cut the tape, and he said, you know, I think this would be most appropriately named the Lindsey Ball Research Center. And I said, you know, Representative Krieger, I think you've got one hell of an idea. This whole research center is really an amazing place. Being on the inside now, where I can help set the agendas for all our advisory meetings, is I've just come to appreciate the enormity of this step that Oregon is taking. The thing that separates us from all the other research centers, and we have one in Oregon at on the Hood River. There's one just across the Columbia U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and they do their thing. They do a lot with genetics. However, the four-channeled stream beds at this center make it unique, and we have scientists applying to use these from all over the world. We have applications from Sweden. We have them, several from Canada. We have them from South America, and we have just recently, and on our agenda for next month, a scientist from Japan that is going to testify about his research and how he would like to use our stream beds. We really have to prioritize because we have our own goals. So we're very tight about who we rent out our stream beds to. One of the questions that has come up in testimony and from Representative Roblin was that, how do we tell the difference in whether or not hatchery fish are ever going to make it to be able to get along with wild fish? And the one thing that people have not, that we're just finally discovering, and common sense probably told us all along, that all wild fish stocks are not the same, and all hatchery stocks are not the same, and it depends on how you mix them. And so we're getting down to the point where we can do a lot with that. This particular bill, I think, is extremely appropriate. Representative Berger said, we like to make sure that they're not going to make us mad at some point in the future. Well, I think this is an opportunity to remind everybody that Lindsey Ball had the foresight to take an old hatchery, the Fall Creek Hatchery, which had a terrible reputation. And that was the place where they clubbed all the fish that were coming back because they were closing down the hatchery and they didn't want the sox to mix. And the guy took the video, and it made a state, well, actually, it made a nationwide splash that ended up with egg on a lot of people's face. And turn that around into something that can make us extremely proud of our state, ODFW, and the direction that we're going. I firmly endorse naming this the Lindsey Ball Research Hatchery.
Thank you, Mr.
Richard. I'm Fred Venata, co-founder of the two organizations that Mr. Ritchie mentioned. I lobbied for the legislation, for the money, for the legislation that set up the hatchery. That you've had some very good testimony on it, which I won't belabor. I'm just here to endorse and urge you to move the bill forward.
Thank you very much. Any questions, members? Thank you so much for your time. Is there anyone else here who would like to testify on House Bill 3534? Representative Berger.
May I, before we go further, reiterate, I was making a joke. I meant no insult to Mr. Ball whatsoever. Okay.
Mr. Vice Chair, I'd just like to point out that we did distribute to the members of the committee the OHRC Progress newsletter that describes the changes that have been made to the hatchery. Now, on page 4, there is a picture of the 4 parallel stream beds.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, then I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3534 and open up a work session on House Bill 3534. Vice Chair Berger.
I move House Bill 3534 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Berger has moved House Bill 3534 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative
Buckley?
Aye.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Representative
Groveland?
Aye.
Representative
Ball? Excused. The motion carries. And I'm assuming that we want to offer this bill to Representative Morgan and Krieger to co-carry.
And, Mr. Chair, I do hope that Mr. Ball comes because, as I say, I've never met the man. I have talked to him.
He's sitting in the back.
Is he sitting in the back?
Yeah.
He is.
Well, he's the one with the red face.
The red face. How do you do?
Thank you for your work, sir, and thanks for sitting through this. With that, members, we'll go back to the first item on our agenda. I'm going to open up a public hearing.
You close the work session.
I'm trying to close the work session, thank you, on House Bill 3534, and open a public hearing on House Bill 3120. And Representative Escal does mention, if you do have a cell phone, please do turn it off. Dr. Stemmeridge, could you remind us about House Bill?
Members of the committee, Vice Chair Buckley, House Bill 3120 requires persons solemnizing a marriage to deliver a marriage license application, license, and record of marriage to the issuing county clerk within 10 days after the marriage ceremony. It directs the state registrar for the Center for Health Statistics within the Department of Human Services to prescribe a standard form for marriage license applications, licenses, and records of marriage. It deletes the statutory specifications for marriage certificates and authorizes county clerks to design and issue commemorative marriage certificates.
Thank you, Doctor. We have only one witness signed up, James Morales. Please come forward. Welcome.
Good morning. Vice Chair Buckley, members of the committee, James Morales, Oregon Association of County Clerks. I'm chairing the Records Legislative Committee. Before you today, we have House Bill 3120, which we worked in conjunction with the State Center of Vital Statistics and with the Department of Human Services, and Jennifer Woodward in particular, to draft this legislation. One of the things that we had brought to the bill kind of late in the drafting was to move the Social Security number from where it is currently listed in the bill to just like a sentence down where it would go into the vital statistic information, which is kept confidential. And we brought it kind of late into the process, and it looks like it didn't make it into the drafting of the bill. But that would be in Section 1, Paragraph 2, after the bold section where it says, must include each applicant's Social Security number. And
what line are you on?
That would be line 18. And actually, talking to Jennifer Woodward, she had requested that we move that Social Security number into line 19 to be in the statistical data, which is kept confidential at the state vital statistics. So we didn't realize until recently that didn't make it into the bill's draft. But we would request that we did move that into that section. Besides that, the remainder of the bill, what we're looking for is there's two sections in the state that call for the return of the marriage license after the ceremony is performed by the officiant. One section requires the return of that the marriage license within 10 days, and the other section calls for 30 days. So we just want to get those two lined up with the 10-day return. And the reason we went with the 10 is oftentimes the couple is very interested in getting a certified copy of their marriage certificate. So the sooner the better would be very helpful. Clarifying these statutes, which is the main purpose of what we'd ask for, to differentiate between the actual application license and license form for the marriage and the commemorative certificate, we felt like we needed to clarify the difference because a lot of the old statutes were calling the marriage license the certificate, where we have this commemorative certificate which is not recognized by the agencies as an official proof of marriage, but the license is. And so when couples want to get a certified copy, they're getting a certified copy of the application and license form that is recorded in the clerk's office as well as at the state vital statistics office. So that's that portion. Let's see.
Mr. Morales, would you take a question from Representative Escobar?
Sure.
That's on the commemorative marriage certificate. Is that something you're going to have to do separate to what you're doing now? And if so, who picks up the tab on that?
Right. Representative Escovel, Vice Chair Buckley, members of the committee. Yes, we currently are issuing the commemorative certificate. We do have a form that had previously been prescribed by the state that counties either can continue to use or they can draft their own commemorative certificate. We do have a requirement that is being asked for by the state vital statistics that we clearly identify the commemorative certificate as not being an official record of the marriage. So it's strictly a keepsake that the couples utilize to...
So in other words, it doesn't cost you any extra money.
No, that's something that we're already doing.
I don't want to initiate an unfunded mandate on anyone.
We're currently doing it. Good. We're just trying to clarify it in the statute, Representative.
Thank you. Please continue.
If
you have anything else in there.
Well, given that, I would just say that what we're trying to do here is just clarify and make it clear that we have this form that we're utilizing as the record, and this is the commemorative keepsake. And we'll kind of leave it at that.
Vice Chair Berger.
Thank you. In reading through this bill, it's pretty clear that what you're really, tell me if I'm wrong, you're trying to make sort of a uniform system here throughout the state in form and in terms of the certificate and the statistical piece. In other words, to make it uniform throughout the state. But it does seem to me that there's a policy change when you go from 30 days to 10 days, and have you consulted with the religious community and the judges and the folks who actually perform the ceremony as to whether that's doable or whether that's going to cause a hardship on them? Because it, you know, if you're used to 30 days and suddenly go to 10, it's like, whoa.
Yeah. Vice Chair Bringer, Chair Buckley, members of the committee, or Vice Chair Buckley. Currently, most clerks are already requiring the 10-day because there is a statute. There's a conflicting statute here with the 30. And we do provide a return envelope for those officiants to just be able to drop the certificate into the mailbox after the ceremony. Like I said, what we're trying to do is just line these up and help the couples that are getting married, because oftentimes they need that to make changes to their information, maybe get a passport, that type of thing.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair, one other.
Paula?
This is a question for staff. I presume that there is an amendment, because I think that he is right. The Social Security should be part of the statistical data, not published.
We'd be happy to order an amendment.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on Representative Berger's question, in terms of the, it's been 15 years since I was married, and I can't remember.
Give it 37. It gets better.
The actual documentation that's required, maybe by one spouse changing a name or your insurance to get a better rate if you're married, those kind of things. Does the couple actually have to produce documentation to the insurance company, whoever it may be? And if they do, does this commemorative certificate do it for them, or do they have to order something separate later on from you?
Representative Hunt, Vice Chair Buckley, the requirement for getting a certified copy of the actual marriage license has, over the last couple of years, evolved to where the commemorative certificate, which perhaps in the past may have been recognized as a proof of marriage, is no longer being recognized by the Department of Motor Vehicles, the IRS or Social Security Office. And so it is now required that they get the certified copies of the application, license, and record of marriage, rather than the commemorative certificate is no longer being recognized.
Paula?
That being true, why wouldn't, I mean, if you're just going to be issuing one document, why wouldn't the one you issued be one that would be a certified copy that could actually be utilized by the couple in going through whatever process they need to go through related to name change or insurance or whatever?
The commemorative certificate is issued and provided to the couple at the time that they get their marriage license. And what they do is they take that to the ceremony, and the officiant and the witnesses all sign off on that. So they have that immediately. The record of the marriage is not complete until it's recorded in our offices and up at the State Vital Records Office. So they don't get that back until a later date after their ceremony has been performed.
Thank you. It's all coming back to me now.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you so much. It's Rouse coming forward.
Thank you very
much. You guys seem like an amendment will be necessary, so I'll just go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3120 and ask Dr. Sandbridge to follow up on the necessary amendment. I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3538, a innovative and wonderful bill brought forward by Representative Escobar.
Mr. Vice Chair, House Bill 3538 authorizes the creation of heritage districts in the manner set by statute for the creation of other local service government entities, local service districts. It provides for governing boards of 5 members and sets the election procedure for board members by zone or at large. It authorizes heritage district boards to assess, levy, and collect taxes to pay the cost of acquiring, constructing, altering, operating, and maintaining heritage sites and structures, to establish and maintain heritage society programs, to issue general obligation bonds not to exceed 2.5% of the market value of taxable property within the district. It limits taxation to a maximum of 1/4 of 1% of market value of taxable property within the district.
Thank you, Dr. Sandwich. Representative Esquivel, we do have one person signed up to testify, but would you like, do you have any comments to make on the bill before?
Actually, this is the second time we've had this in front of us. We had it down in Medford when we went down there as to have the public hearing on it, but there are some things that I think, if you'd like, I'll go to the go out here and discuss them, because I just shared them with you, the co-sponsor.
For the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6, Medford. I have, and which I need to get back, this was handed to me Friday, which is pretty great timing since today was the bill was up. And there's some concern from League of Oregon Cities, LOC, about compression. So I would like to discuss this with them and get back with this committee, because they've recommended three specific amendments to the concept of the bill itself. So, and I never thought about compression. So that's from Proposition 5. But other than that, I think everything's pretty much the same.
So, Mr. Phillips, are you here to talk on that point?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips of the Oregon Department of Revenue. Thank you. I was not at your Medford hearing. I'm sorry. I apologize for not being there.
Should have come down.
I should have. Probably been a better day. Just one comment, and this is something I did miss in the earlier bill. I understand the earlier bill was set aside because it dealt with historic districts, and that was not this change was not consistent with the relating clause. So I read the old bill, and I missed the point totally. But there is a comment in Section 15 that deals with the Local Budgeting Act, and it provides for certain funds in a sinking fund not to be budgeted. It's at the top of page 5. And I just call it to your attention, because I think it is the only exception I'm aware of to the Local Budget Law Act for, and apparently the league also picked up on this issue. But my comments are not intended to slow the bill down at all, and I'd be happy to talk with Mr. Esquivel, Representative Esquivel, and the proponents about it. The Local Budget Act is an act that requires roughly the 1,500 local governments in Oregon to comply with, so that they prepare and present their budgets in a uniform method throughout the state, and that it provides for a public open and access to the information so that it's published annually and it's very accessible. This provides for an exception to that. I think the way I'm reading it is that these certain funds are not need to be budgeted. So I just wanted to call that to folks' attention. I do have a pretty good understanding of why this Heritage District issue came up, because 10 years ago we were wrestling with creating the mathematics for the permanent rates for all districts under Measure 50. And at that time, there were a plethora of levies that governments, local governments had, millage levies, serial levies, one-year levies, et cetera. And those were all built up, as you probably remember, into a permanent rate, which was a general operating authority with no dedication whatsoever for the general operations of the district. And the historic society in Jackson County was funded through a dedicated levy at that time that the voters had passed and given them, and that was then rolled up into a permanent rate, which then did not make it incumbent upon the county to fund that specifically or dedicate those funds. They went to court on that, and there was a whole number of issues which we've been aware of, because we deal with the budget law. But I do understand their issues, and so anything I can do to help with that, or if it's not an issue, that's fine too, but I just want to call it to your attention.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair,
I'll turn the gavel to you if you're ready for it.
This actually started in Jackson County, and he was relating to Jackson County itself. Jackson County in 1946 or 48 passed a levy for its historic district on the historical significance of the county itself at 25 cents per thousand. Now, when Proposition 50 happened, they pulled the plug on their funding, put that, rolled it into the general fund, and the historic district was on the outside looking in, even though they had a tax base at that time. So it's one of those things that happened, unfortunately, with Proposition 50, but I think we need to correct that, because I think we need to look at our heritage and our historical significance of our counties, each and every one of us. but I will work with him if it's okay with Madam Chair. If it's okay with you, I'd like to work with him and the League of Oregon Cities to craft these amendments and get them done as soon as possible, because I was unaware of this until Friday.
Thank you, Representative. And Representative Thatcher, did you have a question?
Well, yes, I did, Madam Chair. Thank you. Well, while you're here, I just wondered if there is any fiscal impact to the state with this bill, or is it mostly just a county issue or a city issue?
Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, this would just be a county issue. It would not affect us at all in terms of fiscal impact now,
okay,
or revenue impact.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, sir. Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you. The only question I would ask in terms of timing, whether it does seem possible to get the amendments done and through this committee. I'm a little concerned about getting through the Senate by the end of May. So I'm not quite sure the best way to proceed on this. And I would,
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, the only thing I can do is do the best I can, and you know what it's like sometimes getting amendments. So I'll just have to ride herd on it and try to get it through. But I will meet with LOC today and you, if that's fine with you.
But the other option I could suggest, Madam Chair, is we could move this to the Senate and have it amended on the Senate side if LOC and Representative Esquire were.
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, I think that's prudent. If I can't get it out within 2 days, I think we should.
And Mr. Stembridge, when would we be able to take this up again if we were to do that?
You know, it depends on the workload of the Legislative Council on producing these amendments.
But I mean, so if we decided we weren't going to amend it, we just wanted to move it.
We could move it today.
Friday,
we could move it today.
We could.
You could carry it over.
So we could help.
Yeah.
And take it up again. We could carry it over again on Wednesday to allow Representative Esquivel time to have his meeting and then decide how to proceed.
Madam Chair, he decided in his infinite wisdom here to be helpful that he will draft the amendments for LC. So therefore, we could have him here by Friday. Now, what would that do if we had the amendments here by Friday?
Well, I assume if the amendments were here by Friday, then we could amend the bill here and move it out.
No, so Madam Chair.
That, they still have to go through the process of copy editing and the things that they do, but that I'm sure that would help.
I would suggest then that we put this on the docket for Friday on the agenda, and one way or the other, if we do not have the amendments, then we'll move forward and amend this in the Senate, and I will ride herd on it to make sure that that is completed. And or if we have our amendments, then we can adopt amendments accordingly.
Okay.
And Representative Buckley is the co-sponsor of this bill. I want you all to know that. And you notice he hasn't volunteered to do it.
Welcome to our world.
He volunteered to move it out of here.
Okay. Seeing no further discussion, I will close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 3538.
Did you vote on the
resolution? Okay.
So can I vote on the one?
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Berger.
I move that the rules be suspended and our esteemed chair, Representative Rosenbaum, is allowed to vote on House Bill 3534.
Vice Chair Berger moves that the rules be suspended for the purpose of allowing the chair to vote on House Bill 3534. Is there objection? Seeing none, the chair votes aye. Thank you very much for that courtesy. And members with nothing further, closed. Oh, did I need to reopen that hearing?
Yeah, you need to reopen that.
Okay, so I'll reopen the public hearing and work session on House Bill 3534. And the chair votes aye. And I'll close the public hearing and work session on House Bill 3534. With nothing further to come before us, we are adjourned.